I've heard that that you wanted to be a composer, that you were really into music when you first started looking at filmmaking. Is that true?
I got into it because I went after some absence from college. I went back to UCLA to finish my degree and majored in music composition, and I even scored a student film while I was there, and that's how I got involved in, I wanted to learn to write music for film, and so that's how I got into the cinema department, and then I took a writing course, and they encouraged me to do more, so I ended up doing directing and making a student film, and then doing camera work and sound recording and all that stuff, and so I just kind of fell into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I notice in your credits you've done a lot of different things. You've directed, you've written screenplays, you've done cinematography, you've even edited. What did you like the best? I mean, what if you had the chance to do something longevity wise as a career, which would you have chosen?
I don't know. I can't really answer that. I mean, the good thing about directing is that you're able to shape things the way you want it, and so often when you write something and somebody else takes it, and of course they think they're fixing it, and you think they're destroying it.
So, yeah.
But I can tell you the thing that I least like to do, and that's the writing. And yet, that's the most important thing. And I'm working on a screenplay right now, so it's I'm really getting into that at the moment.
Now, the screenplay you're working on, is it something that you'll direct again, or do you think you'll pass it on to someone else?
Well, boy, I would love to do it, but that's going to be up to the. If somebody wants to make it, they may have other ideas, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Hopefully, I'll get what I'm hoping to do is get a star who would like me to direct it, and then that'll make a difference. Otherwise, it's the people who put up the money have to say so on those things.
Yeah, that's certainly
the way it is, unless you have a rich uncle with $10 million.
Yeah, especially today. It costs a lot of money to make a film, doesn't it?
No, actually, you can make a film cheaper today than you ever could before.
Really?
Yeah, with video, with digital. Anybody can go out and get a camera and a few lights and not have to pay the laboratory expenses and all that. It's really, you can make a film really cheap. But
well, that's true. I guess from a technical standpoint, we do have some technology that you didn't have at your disposal back in the day.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just the cost of film and processing and prints, it was, you couldn't do it.
I guess I was thinking more for distribution. It seems it takes a lot to get it out there these days.
Well, that's true. The advertising costs are humongous. And, of course, it's always been a major expense, but nothing like what it is today. But just to make the movie, you can do it. And I mean, there's people making movies every once in a while. Out of the thousands and thousands of people who are trying it, somebody will come up with something that just catches on and goes into theatrical release and makes a fortune. It's like playing a slot machine, but it has happened.
Yeah, well, I guess most recently the Paranormal Activity film is a good example of that.
Sure.
Well, let me ask you a question. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, that's an example.
I was going to say, going back to your early career, you had what most of us would probably consider fortunate, maybe you have a different view, but you got to work with people like Roger Corman and I believe Francis Ford Coppola in the beginning of your career. Was that a plus for you, and what did you take away from that?
Well, that's a good question. Yeah, I worked with Francis. We went to school together, worked on each other's student films at UCLA, when he got a job working for Roger Corman, then he brought me in to help him do some of the assignments that he had, and then he went on to do other things, and then I continued working for Roger and finally getting to direct some movies. So, yeah, that's about the way that happened.
What's the most important thing you learned working with Roger?
I would suggest, it's funny because a lot of people ask this, and I don't know, there's a lot of things. The most important thing, I would say, is not just any one thing in particular, but is to really plan carefully so that you make the most of every minute. And the other thing is, he said something to me one time that I've always thought was a great rule. He says, something has to happen in every reel. That's good advice. Something has to happen in every reel. Reel being 10 minutes in those days.
Yeah. Now, going back to your films, there have been a lot of monikers that have been attached to your films over the years. B-films, blaxploitation films, cult films, art films, or grindhouse films. You've had a lot of different monikers associated with your films. How do you feel about some of these monikers?
Well, I don't like the term grindhouse film because my films were not grindhouse films at all. They were major features that played right alongside the big studio pictures, and some of them did better than that. And grindhouse pictures are more like, you know, the She-Wolf, Ilsa the She-Wolf, yes, that kind of stuff. But blaxploitation, I suspect, was a word that was cooked up. Of course, that word didn't exist at the time I made my
right.
black films. But I think the writers for the trade papers, like Variety, they like to come up with things like that. And they got sexploitation and exploitation and other various exploitation. And blaxploitation was just an obvious term. So that's how it came into being.
Well, and Foxy Brown in that genre was probably one of your biggest hit films, wasn't it?
Coffee was the biggest hit. Foxy Brown was originally supposed to be a sequel, and the sequels were not. The sales department at AIP came up with the opinion the sequels were not doing well. They didn't want any more sequels, so we just changed the name of the character. And actually, it turned out to be a blessing in disguise. The guy in the sales department who thought up the title Foxy Brown. I mean, it's just you know what's happened with that title. It's just gone on. The picture was kind of rushed. They weren't sure they wanted to do a sequel with me until the last minute, and so I generally just didn't have time to really work out the kind of really good plot and development that I had with Coffee. And so I just kind of threw everything in to have fun with it, and it turned out to be, nowadays, it's the more popular cult favorite for some reason.
Yeah, it seems to be. I hear more people talking about Foxy Brown these days than Coffee.
It's more over the top, I guess.
Yeah, and you're pretty much credited with discovering Pam Grier. What do you think about that?
Oh, that's absolutely true. Yeah, she came in, and I was casting the Big Dollhouse, and I was interviewing a lot of actresses, kind of a cattle call, I used to call them, because I wanted to read actresses together in groups, you know, see how they looked and played off of each other. And she just came in on one of those calls, and I was just so impressed with her, what we used to call in the business, her authority, you know. I thought she would have a great screen presence.
She certainly does.
She was really gutsy and had no particular training that I was aware of or no any experience that I was aware of, so I just took a chance on her, and she came through like... Ended up singing the title song for the movie. And she just really, she was a hard worker, took her work very seriously, unlike a lot of actresses at her age at the time, and gave it her all, and it paid off for her.
Yeah, that's certainly true. It's paid off for her big time, and she does she recognize the help you gave her in her career?
I don't know. I mean, for a long time, she didn't want to do that kind of thing. She wanted to play films where she could wear nice clothes and have serious roles and this and that, and never had another hit after that. And I think she had an agent who told her she ought to work with better directors. actors are like that. I don't blame her.
Yeah. Well, now I have to tell you, one of my favorite films that you've been associated with would be The Terror, which is one of your early films. And you got to work with one actor at the very beginning of his career and another actor pretty much at the twilight of his career, with, of course, Boris Karloff being older and Jack Nicholson just coming up. When you worked with Jack Nicholson, did you see the Nicholson that would become almost, you know,
no,
trademark?
No, I didn't at the time. I didn't really have very much to – well, I had a lot to do with the picture in terms of rewriting and a lot of the script and coming up with a lot of story on it. And aside from that, the only directing that I had with Jack was dubbing in the dialogue, dialogue replacement. But I thought he was so miscast in that movie that I just, and he also at the time he wasn't taking it very seriously. I had the feeling he didn't really like doing the picture, so because it was such a bizarre experience for everybody, and but of course, so I didn't. It wasn't until I took a look at him at a movie called Little House of Horrors. Was that the one he played a masochist in it? Dennis saw this Little House of Horrors. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the one. And then I saw where his talent really lay. And then, of course, when he came out in the motorcycle picture, of course, it was obvious. But as an Errol Flynn type, no, he wasn't in The Terror.
Well, no, I have to ask you another thing about that movie. I happen to be friends with Sarah Karloff and get to talk to her a lot. And she's often told me that that movie was actually sort of just a thrown together film because I guess Corman had Karloff for a few extra days and some sets and some money, and that it was put together kind of at the last minute. Is that true?
Yes. Yeah, that's true. It's Roger had some kind of a deal with Boris that Boris ended up getting nothing. And when I worked with Boris some years later, he referred to Roger as, "I don't want to hear that man's name spoken in my presence." So I don't think he had a great experience on that. But yeah, there was another picture. I don't remember which one it was. One of those Poe movies, and
mm-hmm.
Roger had a big, beautiful set built on the stage, and he wanted he figured if he could bring, he had Boris in there, if he could make a deal with Boris to come in and shoot a couple of days on that set, he would have the beginnings of a picture and then finish the rest of it later somehow.
Yeah, another actor you're associated with a lot is, it seems that Sid Haig is in a lot of your films.
Oh, yeah, well, he was in my student film at school. That's how we met.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about him and his development over the years?
About his development, I can't really tell you much, but I met him because my mentor at UCLA was Dorothy Arzner, the great woman director, the only feature woman director for many, many years. And she was consulting at the Pasadena Playhouse. She had a friend who was a professor there and who had recommended Sid, and she got to know him, and she recommended him for my student film. And that's how we met. That was his first. And then, of course, after that, when I did Spider Baby, he was just a natural. And I just liked the guy, and we worked together so well. And I always write roles for him. You know?
Right. It seems that way.
Yeah. So he played an Armenian hitman in Coffee, and yeah.
Well, he had this look of a mean guy, right, without even trying.
Sure. Yeah. Well, that's what happened with his career. He was just almost out of the business for a long time because he just got tired of playing roles with so many hands and a gun, you know, this kind
right.
of stuff. And but he's done okay. If I get another movie made, he'll certainly be in it.
Well, that's great. How's the remake of Spider Baby coming?
I don't really know. They're looking for financing still, as far as I know. I just kind of took it on as an advisor and to offer my input on the screenplay and so forth, but they've got the option, and they've renewed it, and how close they are to getting the financing, I couldn't say.
Well, we're probably looking forward to that. Have you seen any of what they've done?
Yeah, I saw one picture that they made. I forget what it was. It was something in 3D. I wasn't real thrilled with it, but but their script is okay. It's just they need it. They're working with it, that's all I can tell you. I don't really know that much about what else they've done other than this picture. I can't think of the name of it. Sid Haig was in it.
Ah, okay. Finally, the movie that kind of brought us together is our review of Pit Stop from the Infinity release, which I'm sure you have a lot to say there. Just wanted to say for the sake of the audience, I made a mistake, and that's what brought me to your attention, in that I assumed that the racing footage was stock footage, and you corrected me. And so can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's not stock footage. Stock footage, perhaps it's a definition. Stock footage is like when you're making a movie. Well, for example, I used stock footage in The Swinging Cheerleaders. We had a movie about football, and we had a very small budget. So we just licensed footage of football games, and then we get cut in with it. And because it's not an important part of the story anyway, so we didn't mind it. But in Pit Stop, we assembled all, we shot a lot, shot 6 weekends of figure eight races, and then assembled together the best moments and worked the story around them. So that was, it's not technically stock footage, but it wasn't staged for the film either. Some of it was staged for the movie, but a lot of it was just we incorporated the footage that we shot ourselves on the production.
Right. Do you remember where that was? Was that a particular race course, or did they create that for you?
Oh, no. It was a racing course. It was in L.A. I forget exactly where. I'm not sure it still exists. I know we're probably going to be doing a new release, as I think I mentioned to you.
Yes, please tell our listeners about that.
What?
Yes, please tell our listeners about this release.
Yeah, we're Shout Factory. They're interested, and we're coming up with a proposal, and the guy who wants to do the extras wants to revisit the racetrack. I'm not sure it still exists, so I haven't had a chance to go there, but we're going to probably interview like George Barris, you know, things. I have a lot of really great extras on it because we feel that that picture deserves a really good shot in the home video market because, it's play. You know, when I made the picture originally, I thought, boy, this figure eight racing, I mean, this is so crazy that this movie is going to play well overseas because all these other people in other countries are going to think this is the ultimate in Americana, you know.
Right.
Craziness. But because the picture had to be shot in black and white, we never really got any overseas sales, although lately it's been showing. It just played at a film festival that Martin Scorsese organized in Vienna a couple of months ago, and they went crazy for it. So maybe it'll get around now that people have more interest in people are willing to look at a black and white movie.
Yeah, I think they are nowadays. I think there's this art element. Well, there's people shooting movies in black and white these days more than there might be.
Yeah. It wasn't so much the people, it was the distributors. They had this belief that that they couldn't, nobody wanted to see a black and white movie. So sure. They wouldn't, overseas distributors, nobody would touch it.
Now, what about the two names? You see it's called Pit Stop, a.k.a. The Winner. Can you tell me what that's all about?
Yeah, the original title on the movie was The Winner, because it had something to do with the whole kind of subtext of the movie. And at the time we were finishing the picture, Universal came out with a movie called Winning, and we felt that the title was so similar, we'd have a real problem with it, so came up with Pit Stop. Mm-hmm. Pit Stop, I mean, some people commented there is no pit stop in the movie, but the whole movie is kind of a pit stop.
Right.
So I thought the title made some sense, whether other people see it or not, I don't know.
Well, that's great. Well, listen, I know you're a busy man. I'm going to let you go here. But before I let you go, is there anything else coming up? You say you're working on a screenplay. Is there any other projects or events that you're going to be involved in that you want to talk to us about real quick?
Nothing has got a definite goal. But one thing I've been working on getting together is remakes of the four pictures that I did with Boris Karloff.
Yes.
1968. Now, the pictures were, in my opinion, totally ruined by the Mexican company. I was supposed to go to Mexico to direct the rest of the pictures, but the producer just took off and I never heard from him again because he knew full well and didn't tell me that the Mexican unions would not allow me to direct a picture in Mexico that was financed by Mexican. So it wasn't until many, many years later that I found out that the pictures had actually been finished. You know, the producer was so... He had such a hard time with this insane deal, doing four pictures back to back. He had a heart attack and died, and I thought that that was the end of it. It wasn't until many years later that I found out they were coming out on video and so forth. And so a lot of people have been asking me, you know, why can't I, like, do remixes in the way they were really supposed to be and brought up to date and modern? So I've been working with some of the people on modernizing the stories and working on a deal in England to get financing. But those things go very slowly, you know.
Well, I hope that you'll keep us informed when something's getting ready to come out so we can go out and check it out.
Yeah, okay, I'll try to do that if something happens. Right now, I'm really, all my energy is devoted to this new screenplay that I'm writing. It's going to be the best thing I've ever done, totally different from anything else.
What can you tell us about it, or is it still kind of top secret?
Yeah, it's not that much of a secret. It's about Paganini, the violinist. He was sort of the Michael Jackson of his day. Mm-hmm. And everybody, was the rumors that he had a pact with the devil in order to be the greatest violinist in the world. He sold his soul to the devil. And the poor guy was just everywhere he went, people. So in my story, he really does. But the devil is something that you would never suspect. So anyway, that's kind of what it's about.
Well, yeah, it wouldn't be very interesting if you told the story that he didn't really have some pact with the devil, now, would it?
You could do it that way. You could do it that there have been pictures like this. It's kind of. I'm modeling a little bit after the way La Vie en Rose was done, which I thought was one of the best movies I've ever seen. And the way you kind of tell a life story in as a portrait rather than a biopic, you know. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of led me to this idea that. So that's kind of it.
looking forward to seeing it. Like I said, I hope you'll keep us in touch with that. And I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule and writing to spend a few minutes with us here at Upcoming Disc. And thank you for the correction. I always welcome when someone points out something that's inaccurate.
Okay. All right. You can say that about the swing cheerleaders. We use stock footage.
Okay. We haven't reviewed that one yet, but if we do, I'll definitely put that in there.
Oh, you should. It's a really good movie. It's like a Disney sex comedy. It's really a much better movie than you think.
And who released that?
Who released it?
Yeah.
Oh, Anchor Bay had it out for a long time, and now they packaged it with two other cheerleaders movies on a multiple package disc, double disc or something. I don't know. I think it's still in release. I'm not sure.
Well, I'll look for it. And also, I'm looking forward to the Shout version of Pit Stop, which I have a feeling will be a much better experience than the Infinity one was.
Oh, yeah. We did a whole new transfer from the original Anthroprint in high def, so we could really, really get the best quality out of it.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. I really am. And once again, I appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule to hook up with me.
Okay. No problem.
All right. Well, you take care, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.